Hello everyone, it's a lovely sunny day, and we're inside. Where better to enjoy the sunny day than inside, in the office. Yes, it's podcast time. It's the Tux Radar podcast, and it's episode 8, series 5, can you believe that?
I know, and we're a week late.
Ah, oh, sorry, so it's episode 8.5, and I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this episode, we have news, lightning, fairly rapid news. We have discoveries, we have a halfway reminder. We've got a at least one Speak Your Brain.
Just the one.
Just the one Speak Your Brain. The reports on last issue's challenges, last fortnight's challenges, and an open ballot. It's a smorgasbord utopia of Linux-related frippery. And if you like that and want more, but in paper format, you can subscribe at tinyurl.com/LXFoffer1. And that's to Linux Format. It's a magazine about Linux and free software. Occasionally a bit of BSD sneaks in. Oof. And if you like that, but you don't like the sort of sound of paper, if you're a tree-hugging hippie with disgusting flaky bits in your beard, you can get a paper-free version... which is on Google Play, and we do Zinio, but don't bother with that, it's rubbish. And do we still do the Ubuntu magazine store?
Yes, we do, I do it.
For a handful of customers on there.
Yeah. I will put it on, and as soon as we get PDFs for the latest issue, the last couple are still on there, so...
Yeah, there's many ways to buy Linux formats and keep us in work.
It's on the Nook store and on the Kindle store as well.
This is great.
I know.
It's as if we're finally
the digital revolution.
Embracing the expanding digital platforms that are going to save the publishing industry.
No, I just searched for it on Google. Yeah, no one's told me.
That brings us to news, I think.
Yes. I like the way you sort of confirmed all the English stereotypes of complaining about the weather. After months of complaining about the cold and rain, you now complained about the sunshine as well.
Oh, it's too hot for me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's sunny, but we're inside. Okay, so on with the news. The first, the big Linux news of recent weeks is a security bug that's been... widely circulated, affecting a lot of kernels from 2.6.37 up to 3.8.9. Basically, they incorrectly declared a pointer, and that allows local code, so you have to actually be at the system to exploit this bug. To be honest, it allows local code to pretty much do anything. You can get root access, you can do... Well, once you've got root access, you can do anything root access can do. So pretty much knacker any system you want to. It's been patched. My system, Ubuntu 12.10, has got that. That's come through to mine. Other distros probably have arrived.
I had to update CentOS on my VPS.
Did you?
Yeah. That was like an urgent request from the people running the servers as well.
Yeah. This bug's hanging around. If you're on any mission-critical systems, make sure you get it fixed. It's surprising it's been around so long without being picked up, really.
But there must be lots of things, I'm guessing, like this. I know that people do penetration testing on the kernel and stuff, but with so many millions of lines of code, so many pointers pointing in lots of different memory locations. I mean, I know that's their job, but it must be so difficult to stay on top of it.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't believe there's any evidence of this being used in the wild before this. I don't believe there's any evidence it's been used in a while before it was put online a few days ago. Update your systems. On to Debian. We don't regularly have much Debian news because Debian's one of those distros that doesn't make the news. Yeah, they just quietly get on with creating their distro, which is a good thing.
Yeah, we should give Debian more coverage.
It's one of those things because they release so infrequently, there's not a big they just quietly do their thing.
Yeah.
But the first piece of Debian news is that they're in space. They're on the International Space Station.
This is awesome.
Awesome news.
Yeah, NASA's been updating their laptops And they're shifting everything to Debian 6 just in time for it to be outdated.
At least that's not so important with Debian.
Yeah.
They probably prefer the old GNOME desktop. No, I was going to. I promised someone no Unity bitching this episode.
So yeah, it's great to see it up there. It's I don't know how they installed it. Did someone go up there with a stack of CDs and feed them in one by one? I don't know.
Maybe they were listening to the our discussion last fortnight about the Sousa box set, and they all got a bit nostalgic.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Can you apt get from space?
We should ask Mark Shuttleworth.
Yeah. We should.
I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah, so the second bit which we of news which we hinted on before was Debian 7's been launched. It's been 2 years or so since the last one. So good work, Debian. Well, almost good work, actually. I went to install it and the installer's broken.
Oh, no.
It's a known
after
bug.
After 2 years.
It's been a known bug for years.
And what is there to break in a Debian installer, anyway?
It's the grub.
Right.
I don't know, the grub config. There's a workaround. Basically, you have to not select it to automatically install grub, but then tell it where to install it.
Right.
But it's just...
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, that's like a mission critical bug in the final version that went out.
Yeah. After 2 years, go, okay, we'll give it a week, we'll fix this bug, and then put it out. I mean, it must have been obvious to everyone testing it. Oh no, I can't test it.
Well, that's it. Maybe nobody did test it. You know, the final installation disk.
Yeah.
Some small change.
But, and it, yeah, it was in there while it was, this version was, I always forget which version. Does it go testing, it goes unstable, testing, stable, does it?
Right.
Or is it the unstable, testing, unstable? Whichever way around.
Testing, unstable.
Is it that way around? Anyway, it was in the, this bug was in, you know, there for a long time in the, wherever it was before it went to stable. And they didn't fix it.
So is it going to be on the Linux format DVD?
It is.
Awesome. Fixed.
No. they said they're going to fix it for the first point release, whenever that is.
Right. That's an interesting quandary, isn't it?
I did think about, should I put it on the disk with this bug? And I think, well, considering there is a workaround, put it on. It's such a big release. Rather than wait for... We could always put the point release on as well.
When
that comes out. We shall see. So moving on. More distro-related news. Antergos, I think is how you pronounce this, is the new name for Synarch now that it's no longer Cinnamon, or no longer Cinnamon by default. They've switched to GNOME 3, saying Cinnamon was just too much hassle to keep up with the rolling release.
That's quite a change. Quite a change in the reasons why you'd want to use the distribution. So
there is still Cinnamon in the installer. You get the option. I think it was GNOME 3 Cinnamon and Razer QT, maybe XFCE as well. And you get to pick one. Presumably, you get to pick more than one. I don't know. I haven't tried the installer.
Does it use its own? Do you know if it uses its own repositories?
I was looking into that. I couldn't see. I don't know. No. I'd have to install it to find out.
Yeah.
Next, FreeCiv, that popular Linux game, is now on HTML5. So you can play it from your phone, your work computer, wherever you happen to be. You can waste time.
Excellent.
No time now need not be wasted.
How have they done it? Is it some... Because I remember, like, I guess FreeCiv must use some kind of toolkit. Because I just remember, like, a few years ago, there were lots of promises, like, from Qt and GTK that eventually you'd get HTML5-like features for free if you start using certain features of a toolkit. And I just wonder if the fact that they've been able to create an HTML version means... Well, I know it doesn't mean HTML, but I mean, there's simply a way for them to output it from whatever tools they were using.
LibreOffice did a demo of that using the GTK HTML linker.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
But well, from looking at it, it doesn't look like that. It looks like they've re-implemented the interface in HTML5, and it's been around for a while. It's been sort of building up for a while, and they've just sort of launched it, whatever that means. You know, it's still in the early stages. It's not 100% yet. So it doesn't look like that's what they've done,
right?
From my clicking around and playing, but I didn't delve into what goes on behind the scenes.
Have to have a closer look at it, because if they've come up with some kind of rendering engine toolkit front end for Free Civ, then it might be useful for other games too.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of HTML5 rendering engines around.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, whether they've used one or gone on their own, I don't know. But yeah. Scratch, the programming language that really was popular on the Raspberry Pi, has just had version 2 released, which also actually has a HTML5 version.
Ah.
So you can use it online.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it works. It's almost exactly the same as a desktop editor, but in your browser. It's at scratch.mit.edu/projects/editor.
Ah, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic tool. And, you know, for many years, I think it was languishing without a single update. You know, we were talking about this before, the fact that the Raspberry Pi has made it pretty much the default beginner's language on their platform for great reasons, because it's so visual.
Yeah.
The fact that it's spurned development. I mean, it's spurred development.
Yeah. I mean, I just had a quick play with it before coming down. The biggest thing seemed to be it now integrates with video and you can do stuff like that. And I don't have a webcam, so I don't know how well it works. And you can now create your own little code blocks. So I guess it's similar to like creating procedures or functions in other languages. You can't, it has to be created from scratch blocks. So you can't, like, you know, embed C code in it or whatever you wish to do.
Right.
So you're still limited by the features available, but you can sort of package it up in a nicer way now. It looks like an improvement on Scratch 1.
Yeah, we'll have to have a closer look at it.
Yeah.
Your excellent Scratch tutorials in the issue that we've just sent to the printers, or I sent to the printers last week. So that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Blender, a new version of Blender gets a new non-photorealistic rendering engine, which sounds a bit weird. But basically what that means is the standard Blender engine does really, if you want to make something look really real, basically, the standard Blender engine does that. What it didn't have, or what it had an old version of, was something to do sort of cartoony type things, things that aren't designed to look real, but look, for whatever reason, good stylistically or whatever. So it's got a great update to that. Blender, obviously a great open source project, it's done huge things. And
I reviewed a brilliant book last month. I think it was Blender Masterclass. That's a mixture of Masterclass, Masterclass. and it really made me realize how great Blender has become, as difficult as the UI is and as difficult as it is to get your head around, and the fact that it's free software. And maybe we should do something on Blender, because we used to do Blender tutorials, but we never got any feedback from it. And we kind of assumed that the learning curve and people weren't bothered. So if anybody listening wants us to look into doing some Blender tutorials, let us know and we'll make it happen.
Yeah, just rounding off the news is the Raspberry Pi camera module has been released. Although you may or may not be able to buy it. It's looking like it's sold out at a lot of places.
Yeah, I know the Raspberry Pi Foundation think this is fantastic, and I don't want to knock them for their efforts. But I don't get it. I don't get the fascination with adding a camera module to the Raspberry Pi.
What specifically don't you get?
I'm just not excited by it. I haven't really got any interest in turning a Raspberry Pi into something that can take photos or videos.
I think this is going to be more one for the sort of robotics Raspberry Pi people. If you're doing a little buggy, stick a camera on it.
Well, couldn't you have just plugged in some USB webcam?
You can.
Yeah, what's the difference? Yeah.
Well, there's a few differences. Just looking up the specs, I'll just go through the specs briefly. It's a 5-megapixel camera, does HD video at 30 frames a second, standard definition at 60, costs £20. It weighs 3 grams.
Right. Yeah,
fair enough.
It's absolutely tiny.
So you can send it to space.
Yeah.
But webcam support on the Raspberry Pi has been a bit flaky, to be honest. There were some work, some don't work. There's obviously a huge... everything goes through USB on the Raspberry Pi, the networking, this,
So this doesn't connect to the USB bus?
No, I don't know if it, I don't think it does in the board. It connects into the...
Because there's a serial port as well, isn't there? On
it doesn't connect into one of the standard ports. It connects into, what's it, is it TTL? The little pins that stick up on
right,
the board.
Right,
right. It plugs into those. So I believe it goes to a different bus than the USB.
Oh, that could make a big difference then.
And it just... Well, the way it's been designed is to just work with the USBs. You have to worry about drivers, is it?
Yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
This, you plug it in, standard set of apps. It's, again, it's about standardizing the platform.
Yeah.
You plug it in, you have these apps just work. Don't have to worry about anything. Mm-hmm. Again, I'd imagine it's lower power than a standard USB webcam. So it weighs nothing. It's £20, so it's comparable price.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you can get it.
Oh, it sounds quite promising when you put it like that.
Yeah. And again, HD video at 30 frames a second, that's quite quick.
Yeah, considering the power of the Raspberry Pi as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought many webcams can do that, at least not the ones I've tried.
No, I've not looked at them for so long. I've not, you know, not needed to use them.
Yeah. And that's the news.
Excellent.
Good news.
Really diverse roundup of news stories. So, discovery of the Fortnite 3 weeks. Anyone want to go first?
Can I go first?
Of course you can.
Thanks, Graham. My discovery is Kanaima. GNU Linux. Or Kanaima? Kanaima. Kanaima. And that is the official GNU Linux distribution of Venezuela.
Is that sponsored by the Chavez family?
It was created in accordance with Presidential Decree number 3390.
Effie was nearly right.
Yes. It's a dynasty.
Awesome.
That almost goes against the whole concept of freedom, isn't it?
You're free to be what you want to be, man. You're free to be
not in Venezuela,
nationalized man. Oil and be assassinated by exploded cigars
not
and
in
things.
Venezuela, that's different. Oh,
well. It's quite a big debate in the open source community about whether or not you can put clauses in the licenses to do things like restrict its use in bad regimes and whatnot. And one, I think it's part of the JSON libraries has a clause saying you cannot use this software for evil, and there's a big debate about where. Yeah. And obviously that goes against the four freedoms, freedom to use the software for any purpose. But the guy who wrote that software apparently gets emails quite regularly from people asking,
"Is this
we use it for this?" Apparently, one of the most frequent people asking is IBM on behalf of its customers. And he's given IBM a blanket release to use this software for evil.
Continue, please.
Well, anyway, that's it, really. It's going to be used. It has been designed as a solution for the National Public Administration. And it's not surprisingly, it's based on Debian. Mm. So, you know, my response would be, why not just use Debian? But no, dictators like their shiny toys.
They're humans as well. They're humans.
Yeah, that's it. So watch this space for a review. We'll give it a go. Let's get Effie to review it.
And I installed Venezuela in Spanish on it.
There is nothing you can do to me. Chavez has no returns.
Oh my! That really.
Is he still alive, Chavez?
No, he's dead.
Yeah. Oh, right.
He's dying. But his legacy.
His legacy lives on.
It's like Sauron. His spirit still endures.
Well, he still has a Linux distribution. He'll never really be dead.
Long live Venezuela. Honestly. Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah.
Well, after that, what am I going to say? Well, mine is not a discovery. It's just, I basically just find out a few things about the graphical side of Linux. A few years ago, do you remember Nick Finch? Remember that guy?
I remember Nick Beach. Yeah. I thought of Nick Beach earlier when Andrew was talking about beards and bits of skin.
Yeah, but
and he's a vegetarian.
But he did he reviewed Scribus, an earlier version of Scribus, and he laid out a few pages in the Scribus.
Yeah, it took him like a few weeks.
A few magazine pages in the Scribus, and I'd ask him, "Oh, you want me to help you?" And he said, "No, I'll do it. I think I'm doing all right." He said, "But the problem was managing funds in Linux. That was what, 5 years ago, somewhere, I can't remember." And so for ages, I thought that funds basically was that sort of dark side of the graphical side of Linux. When I did the tutorial, the Scribus tutorial, I didn't even bother just because I was scared of basically having problems with.
So you didn't bother trying to get the fonts that
I just used the system fonts.
Yeah.
And that was that. So I avoid, sort of bypass all that problem. But I just realized that you can manage fonts. There's an app called Font Manager. You can get it from the Software Center, obviously. And then my question after that was, so what sort of fonts can you install in Linux? See, most of the fonts are designed as TrueType for Macs and Windows. And you can install TrueType fonts. And we were having this conversation with Graham earlier on, with a command and the command line, you can change the font cache, isn't it?
I think it's just as simple as copying the TTF files to the fonts folder and then running a font rebuild cache command or something like that,
which is great. I mean, obviously we never talk about these sort of subjects, we hardly talk about these subjects on the
Mac. I only know because on my arcade machine I installed a Commodore 64 font, the Commodore 64 front end that I designed, and that's what I had to do.
Right, well there you go. And I think that's a fantastic thing if you're gonna, if anyone is sort of a digital artist or they're still doing desktop publishing, font managing in Linux is actually available and seems to be quite easy to use. And there's a few websites out there that you can download free fonts. You can donate to the authors and stuff like that, but there's tons of websites that you can download legally fonts designed for free use. And that is that. That is my discovery.
I bet Font Manager does it all for you. You could probably just drag a TTF file into
I haven't actually installed it. Yeah. I haven't installed it, but I think it would be a good idea just to have a pop and trying to use and see what the functionalities are.
Yeah.
And see if it works in not just in the Scribus, but if it actually works in GIMP and Krita and so on and so on. That's it. That's my.
I don't get the world of fonts. I don't know why they're so expensive. Why they have to be licensed? People charge like thousands of pounds for them, and I don't see why they're so difficult to create. Yeah,
we did a tutorial on it.
Yeah, we did do a tutorial on it.
Well, I think it's an artistic expression, and it is a function. It has a function as a piece of art. It has a function. So I think this, whether the astronomical prices. Yeah, you're right. I think. Some of them
and their licenses. Stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Their licenses. I mean, okay. I don't know how long it takes. Let's say it takes you a month to create a font. Let's be really generous. Yeah. And let's say that's worth £10,000 of your own work. How can that go on for like 10 or 15 years of this obscene licensing costs?
The guy who invented, I think it was Helvetica, got paid once and died a pauper.
Yeah.
And it was licensed by whichever company.
But like, he's been recognised as a fantastic.
It's more important than FP's world.
Yeah. Well, there's a film about Helvetica.
Simon Helvetica, his name was.
I read it in
I just made that up. So, Mr. Frutiger. Is it the same villa that did Frutiger?
I don't know, but I'll find out for you. I shouldn't know because I'm a graphic designer, but really.
We should find the guy or woman that did Comic Sans.
Comic Sans, yeah. That's.
That's for different reasons.
Hobble.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. That was my finding out. More than a discovery.
What happened to the days when you used to have to download the fonts when you installed a Linux distro? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, it would import the TTF fonts from Windows or something like that, get MS Ariel and things. Yeah.
You don't have to do that anymore.
No. Mandrake always used to do that. You're right. Yeah.
And it was always that thing. They weren't allowed to do it in the install. You had to go afterwards and download the fonts. I don't know. Just works now. Shall I do my discovery?
Yeah.
I guess my first discovery involves probably a few of the listeners. I've discovered IRC. I'm slightly late to the party.
But that was my semi-discovery last time. Yeah.
And consequently, I did. So I've been hanging out on Freenode channel Linux format. We can't change the subject, I don't think, to
it. I need Mike's, to speak to Mike.
Yeah. Mike's run off with the op details.
Wait, has anyone seen Mike recently? I've got this weird dream.
But yeah, so now I feel I need to spread my wings and branch out to some more IRC channels, but I've no idea where to go. So I'm looking into doing that. If you've got any suggestions, drop them in the comments.
And, I've really enjoyed it. It's been quite good. It's like just this morning, we were just having a very brief chat about what to do as a challenge. And, you know, it's great having people on there you can just ask.
Yeah.
I really like the fact that you, like, was it 2 weeks ago that you mentioned that people were talking about me on one of the channels?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, yeah, it was, because...
Does that count like
we didn't do the podcast last week because Ben and Andrew were away. So Effie and I joked about doing a podcast on 80s movies.
80s films.
And people on IRC were quite keen on it, but yeah, I think the reality of it would have been quite different.
Top Gun. That's a different magazine.
Yeah. Molly Ringwald.
Yeah. The Breakfast Club.
Yeah. 30 minutes on Blade Runner. That's what it would have been.
That was a challenge.
And my second discovery before you descend into the world of 80s movies.
He was going that way.
I've seen things, you people.
A couple of podcasts ago, I challenged us to use KDE, and I'm still using actually. Use Caligra Words as to write my features in, and I like it. But recently, I've been using Kate as my text editor, and it strikes a balance with me that it's complex enough to do everything I want it to do. It's got the little terminal there if I need to compile stuff. But at the same time, it's simple enough that it doesn't overload me with features and whatnot that you get in an IDE. So I used to use it many years ago for developing, and I've just started to again. And I like it.
Yeah, Kate is great. What used to be great about KDE is that Kate was using like the default text editing user widget, so that whenever you learned shortcuts and things for Kate, you could use them in KDevelop or you could use them in KWord or whatever it happened to be that was using the Kate editor widget, but it's not so important anymore.
Okay.
But it was nice, yeah. The syntax highlighting and the snippets are really powerful.
Yeah.
Cool. That leaves mine. I think it was one of the news stories last week that Ben mentioned that BitTorrent had created Sync, which was like a Dropbox alternative, but you ran the Sync server on your own server. So there was no central repository for your data. And I installed it on my servers and have since got rid of Dropbox, just deleted Dropbox entirely. Now use BitTorrent Sync. It's just so powerful. It's so easy to install. I mean, it's just a binary blob. You just install it and run it, and then you basically open up a web browser and choose the folder to share. It gives you this magic cookie number, which you then just copy somewhere, and then when you install BitTorrent Sync on another machine, you just paste in this cookie number, and it automatically finds whatever instance of Sync is running, wherever it is on the internet, and starts syncing the folders, and it's really quick. It's great. Might have mentioned it last time, but it works really, really well. And the other thing is that I've been messing around with my arcade machine a bit more. And on a slightly... I SSH to it because it hasn't got a keyboard attached to it. But I've discovered... It's not really discovery. I always knew you could do this, but I didn't realize it was so easy. And that's opening an application on a remote X server, not forwarding the application. You know, when you type in when you're connected through SSH and you type in Kate or something and it complains that it hasn't got the right X authority credentials, all you have to do is type export X authority equals the path to your .x authority file, which is usually in your home folder, and then export display equals in quotes :0, which is the name of the first display. And then when you then type Kate, it'll run on the machine that you're connected to, which is really handy if you want to do some stuff. And that's it. They're my two discoveries.
Is that not? Can you not do that with SSH-X? Is that not?
Isn't that X forwarding?
Yeah. Sorry. So it's not doing that.
What it's doing is it's you're connecting to. Okay, so I'm connecting to my arcade machine from another computer, and I want to run an app on my arcade machine X server.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I've got you.
So.
So it's sort of.
So if I want to load up the main front end,
yeah.
So I haven't got a keyboard connected to the arcade machine. I can do it from SSH.
I've got you. So the window appears on the remote.
Yes, that's
computer.
Right. Yeah, it's a bit tricky because you immediately assume I'm trying to forward it.
Yeah,
it's a difficult one to explain. But no, I'm trying to run the front end or something else on the arcade machine remotely.
I've got you.
I think on the command line you can do it when you change using SUX. If you change users on the and you lose track of the X authority file, SUX is a command that allows you to log in as Graham, then switch to Ben, and then run apps on Graham's desktop as long as you used SUX Ben.
Okay.
The X credentials are copied to your folder. It's the same thing but done remotely.
Okay.
That's it anyway. And they were our discoveries.
That brings it. That brings us hurtling with a flourish to the halfway reminder. Still to come, we have Speak Your Brains, report on our challenge.
And the open ballots.
Yes. Speak Your Brains then.
Speak Your Brains.
I'm going to try. So somebody sent Andrew an audio file.
Beardy Jesse.
I'm going to try and play it from the laptop because that seems the best way of us being out. It's the same laptop that we're recording the podcast on, so let's see if this works or creates this infinite feedback loop. Ready?
I really hope Jesse's a man.
Hi guys, Beardy Jesse here. That's an internet name. My parents weren't hippies or anything. I was wondering if I could ask some advice on offsite backup. Now, I've got an old PC. It's a 2 gigahertz single core with a gig of RAM. And I want to store it at a friend's house or something and have it synchronize my NAS so that if my flat is flooded or someone comes and takes all my technology, I still have all my data. Now, I've been thinking about using a sort of minimal Linux install and then just rsyncing it, but I'm also wondering whether or not I should use something like NAS for free because it has ZFS support. And to my knowledge, ZFS allows you to put a whole load of hard disks in, and then it looks at it as if it's just one single massive hard disk rather than having to deal with chopping and changing your files between small individual hard disks. So I'm not sure which way to go, or if there's a way of getting ZFS to work with a normal Linux install. And if you've got any advice, I'd be happy to hear it. Cheers.
That's it. I don't know. I haven't looked up. I haven't looked too deeply into the ZFS, but it's only just kind of working on Linux, isn't it? And I would say it's changing far too rapidly to rely on as a way of duplicating your data.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to use ZFS, use a BSD that supports it properly. Is it BSD that supports it properly?
I think it does. Yeah, yeah. Well, it obviously must have started with Solaris, but I know that the ports have been working recently. I mean, BTRFS has got some similar functionality, but it's not. I think, especially as it's like effectively a home solution or at least a small scale solution, rsync is the first thing I'd think of. rsync and a cron job.
Yeah, I mean, so you've got to look at how much data you've got. Yeah, is the first thing. I mean, if it's a couple of documents in your documents folder, then whatever, you know, just an rsync will do it fine. If you've got terabytes worth of data and you're building a mini data center in your friend's house and something like ZFS or V3FS is something worth looking at.
Yeah, I think for a NAS, I'd still, if it was me, I now use kind of BitTorrent sync for all of my, for stuff I need to keep a track of. It works really well because everything's like duplicated in the four or five machines that I've got running the client. Mm. But yeah, for a more formal backup, I just make sure that there's some kind of 24-hour backup routine that runs and copies everything across to somewhere that I know is safe and something I can get to without having to worry about file systems.
Yeah. I mean, FreeNAS, which you mentioned, is BSD, isn't it? So I assume that supports ZFS. Although it's not something I've used.
It is BSD, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do something on ZFS.
Well, Chris Brown's going to be doing something on, I think, ZFS, followed by BTRFS next month and the month after.
Right.
I was going to say, if you want those features in Linux, you probably want to be using B3FS.
But what worries me about these cutting-edge file systems that have this built-in kind of mirroring ability is that maybe it's because I'm too old, but I lose, in my mind, I can't see it.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, if there's a corruption or if I lose part of the drug, I'd be so worried that that kind of loss would be copied across to the other parts of the file system. But, you know, I know RAID is obviously designed to do this, and there's iSCSI RAID drives, which can also do similar things if you want to remote part of your RAID system, mount part of your RAID system remotely. But then I lose simple track of being able to untar a backup, which worries me. But then I've never done any kind of backup at scale. So I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think that's the best we can offer.
If any readers have got any advice in the comments.
This is good. I quite like it if this was the Speak Your Brains was a Q&A thing.
Yeah. It'd be better if we had any A's.
Well, that's true. but maybe the listeners are the best people to answer.
Yeah.
The listeners definitely are the best people to answer.
Why ask four brains when you can ask many thousands of brains?
That's true.
Yeah.
For a backup solution, email it to yourself.
Google Drafts. Gmail Drafts I still use. Backed up a load of source code just doing that last night.
When I've got anything important, I'd back it up onto my phone or a USB stick because I don't trust anything else.
Yeah. Cool, thanks. It's time for the next item on our fun-packed podcast.
This is a packed podcast.
It is. It's full of stuff. It's full of stars and other stuff. And that thing is the challenge report, which is a report on the challenge that we set ourselves last fortnight, 3 weeks ago, which was to use a different distro chosen at random by the Wheel of Fate.
Yes.
How have we all got on?
Well, all right, I think. I used Ubuntu, the latest version of Ubuntu. What's the name?
Raring Ringtail. Well, just for context, what distro do you use ordinarily?
Well, normally I use Mint, but I was asked by a previous podcast to use Ubuntu and use KDE. So I've been using Ubuntu 12.10 with KDE, Ubuntu, which, by the way, I'm struggling with badly because I find KDE mental.
You don't have to look at me.
No, don't worry. It's just I've got no other target. I've been using the latest version of... What was it, 13.04 or something like that?
13.04, yeah.
I think it's really good. I think it's really fast. It looks the same as previous versions. It really graphically doesn't say I'm changed. I'm Ubuntu and I'm changed. Exactly the same. Although the icons in the launcher, is that what it's called? The toolbar, whatever. Look a little bit more refined. It seems that they tweaked them a little bit.
I don't like them at all, but having said that, I mean, I reviewed Ubuntu for the issue that's just gone and gave it a really good review.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It looks very, it's really fast. The search engine is really quick as well. It seems to be more coherent than previous versions as well. It's weird because the search engine is called, the panel is called, little icons at the bottom. If you're looking for videos, for instance, you click on the video icon. It gives you recommendations, and the top recommendations are the programs of, say, for instance, Last Night and the BBC iPlayer. I found that a little bit freaky, but I suppose everything's localized and it's just a recommendation, but it looks really good. I made someone notice.
As a distribution, it's really pushing...
Yeah.
It's doing things its own way and doing things that other distributions aren't, which I really have to admire them for. You know, all those kind of small features.
Just when you look at the software center, it just looks fantastic. I have to say they put so much work on the visual on the interface that it makes everything really, really easy. And it also reacts really quickly in comparison. For instance, I've been using Mint, and the software center in Mint is really clunky.
Yeah.
I think also it really depends on what sort of hardware you're using. If it's a newish computer, then everything seems to be flying really on all the performance and the environment.
Installing apps from the search lens is just great.
Yeah. I think it's a really... Performance-wise, I think it's an improvement on previous versions. Well, that's what I think. One thing I also liked, it was on the Windows Manager. Each folder, the default folders, also they have their own icons and they've been designed with outlines. and they look really pretty. I'm not sure whether that was the case in previous versions, but it's black and white icons. And so it almost seems as they actually sat down and thought about the design of or the interface properly this time. Oh, yeah. That's the impression that I get. Yeah, no, I think it works really well. I think everything
cool.
is
It's good to say something up. Positive about Ubuntu.
Especially from me.
No, I think in the review, I really come to the conclusion, I look at it really as somebody who isn't a Linux user, who doesn't really know or care about what Linux is. And I think they'd install Ubuntu and they'd use it and find it pretty good, really good.
Yeah, I think
and,
you know,
we just have problems with it, I suppose, for other reasons, from a more traditional Linux distribution perspective. But actually, coming at it from Windows 8, it's a fantastic operating system.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. Yeah, anyway, that was my report.
I was using Pear. In the first thing I noticed, first of all, if you're not familiar with Pear, it's basically, it's Debian and Ubuntu based, and it's designed to work and look like Mac OS or OS X, whatever you want to call it. So that's its rough raison d'etre, if you will. And the first thing about it is it really feels like a coherent system. It's not a bunch of apps that have been thrown together and had a desktop environment slapped on top of and sort of hastily arranged. It feels like, and I guess it's quite similar to what you're saying about Ubuntu, it feels like care's been put into making it all look right. The apps look the same. They're the same. They've picked apps that have the same design philosophy. And when they aren't, when they've sort of tweaked it, they've forked some apps and made it look right with that desktop. The desktop won't suit everyone. The apps won't suit everyone. They're very sort of minimal, very sort of just worky, but at the expense of having thousands of configuration options. Obviously, going to that from KDE, it's like a placid lake.
Lake Placid.
I've no idea what Lake Placid's like.
With crocodiles, with giant crocodiles.
And it just feels easy. You know, that you obviously, yeah, you can't configure it to be exactly what you want, but
it's like Steve Jobs meditating.
It is. It's like Steve Jobs meditating under the Bodhi tree. So just to give some examples, it uses the Geary email program, which is just, I was amazed how well it worked, actually. I used it on my webmail, just typed in my email address, my password, and bang, just worked.
Oh, excellent.
Pulled it all down. Didn't delete it off the server like, I think Thunderbird did that once. Yeah. Just deleted a decade.
It's the default, that, yeah.
A decade and a half worth of emails just gone. You realise what's happening too late. Why would they delete them off the server? On Air's their music manager. Again, simple, just works. Time Back, really easy to use backup solution. Probably not suitable if you've got a NAS with several terabytes at your friend's house. But good if you want to chuck some stuff on a USB stick and be able to switch it back. Stuff like that. And it just doesn't have to be complex. Each application does one thing well, and that's it. I tried to make a list of stuff I didn't like, and the only thing I could come up with is that they use, the sort of 0-1 power off icon. They use that to shut windows, which just confused me for a while.
Right.
I was like, I don't want to turn off the computer, just shut the window.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was great.
Oh, it sounds brilliant. Good. I had a similar experience with Fuduntu, which I think tried, because it's no longer being developed, tried to be like an Ubuntuized, in terms of ease of use, version of Fedora. And it's very, very clean. It's very kind of OS X-ish in that it has the Cairo dock at the bottom, beautiful icons, minimal kind of display, good selection of apps. I really didn't have any problem with it at all. In fact, I liked it. It used Nautilus Elementary, which is like a simplified version of Nautilus, but it still has things like two-panel view, and I really like that. The whole thing, actually, from a KDE user's perspective, despite the fact that the desktop is using GTK kind of GNOME, looks great. It's a really nice aesthetic. The Nautilus file manager does everything I'd need it to do. The fact that it's based on Fedora gives you a different selection of packages. It's a great distribution. But that's all there is to it. You know, that's it. So,
does it still have a tiger as the default desktop background?
No, it didn't. It had a flower, I think. Use DuckDuckGo by default, which I thought was nice. Included Dropbox, which I don't use anymore, but I did rely on it a lot. Not bad. It's a pity that it's going, because there's more to it than just... I know they're going to replace it with something else.
Yeah, hopefully they'll continue that same philosophy.
Yeah, that's the same philosophy, yeah, because it's worthwhile.
I use Forcelight, which is a rolling release distro, but strangely not with... It's rolling release, but it's got quite a lot of old... It's not a cutting edge rolling release. It's weird. It's they've got the latest version of LibreOffice, but they've got the running still old desktops. So you get the cutting edge software, but without being dragged into the brand new 3D desktop paradigms. It's actually really good. So you can use old GNOME 2.x, which was fine. There's no need to change that. That's why I'm using Debian Mint with the Mate desktop, and it just works. It's really good. So rolling release, and it's so easy to install as well, which is what tripped me up when I tried Arch. I just could not work out how to do it. Probably could have worked out it if I'd been bothered.
It's time to invest into it. These days, you think why?
No, I don't want to do that. So somebody's gone to the trouble of creating this distro that just works and gives me rolling releases out of the box. Just took about 20 minutes to install. Really, really easy, really clean, graphically nice installer. And then you get the desktop that time forgot, which is great because the old-fashioned is good. Yeah, that's it.
Excellent.
It just works really well. What else have I... I've written some notes here. Dark grey text on a black background in the installer is the only flaw I found. So it just made it a bit hard to read. But once it's installed, it's installed.
Mm. Right. That's it. So we need a new challenge. And I asked the folks on IRC.
Oh.
This morning. And Count Jocula, I think, well, he made the only suggestion, but I think it's a good suggestion.
The best suggestion.
It's a good suggestion. He said... we should try and convert an OS X or Windows user to Linux over the next couple of weeks and report back on how it goes. And if possible, he said, get them in on the podcast to talk about their experience.
Document it.
So maybe we could find someone in the office to pick on. Maybe we could just choose one person and they can do it, and then we can see if they can. We can get them in the next podcast.
I've been having this argument with the some of my neighbors.
Chris Thornett. Sorry, Effie.
I've been having this argument with some of my neighbors that they're really Mac orientated users, and I've been having this argument with them. So probably I'm gonna see him tonight in the club.
Could they come into the podcast?
I might be able to record him if I manage to.
Okay. Maybe try to do that.
Yeah, if I manage to ask them to sort of at least use it, see what they think.
And we've got a new member of the team to replace Gary. His name's Chris Thornett, and he's a Windows guy. So we'll be able to ask him to use Linux, and we'll get him if he's up for it.
And he really liked Windows 7, but really dislikes Windows 8. Yeah. So he's prime territory, ripe Excellent. For conversion.
So we can do this. Okay.
Well, it's 1 o'clock already, so
it's lagger time.
We should move swiftly on to the open ballot.
I quite fancy a pint.
Yeah. So Linux, it's in space in the form of Debian 6 because the International Space Station has got rid of its Windows laptops. Why did it take this long? So where would you like to see Linux next? What is that? Obviously, space is the final frontier. What's the final frontier plus one? GAB plus plus.
Ray index error.
Gavin J says, in my car, I would love to see Linux in my car. Every model of car has their own entertainment system with Wi-Fi. I could download Tux Radar podcast at home and listen to it without fiddling around with Bluetooth or plugging things into each other. It could be upgraded without having to upgrade the whole car and even run apps with access to data about speed, location, fuel consumption. This all sounds perfectly doable. I currently write my mileage log for the taxman on a bit of paper that I constantly lose. I lost my mileage log. Very sorry, taxman. I would love to select work or personal on the touchscreen and have the car make its own logs that I can upload to my desktop. Yeah, brilliant. That sounds ace. Omniferous Implementer says that he would like to see, or her, would like to see Linux on the TV. Some glossy 30-second ad not telling everyone that Windows and Apple are a bunch of self-satisfying user-hating plebs, but that Linux, yes, they could use the L word, is the dog's knackers. And anyone using said OS would be having a lot more sex if they did. Advertising standards.
Isn't that what all adverts do? If you use this, you'll have more sex.
Yeah, I saw an advert in Tatler the other day, which was for... I can't remember what it was for, but it was completely unrelated to the product. It was just two really good-looking people standing there. Like, what's the message? If you buy this product, you'll become gorgeous. It was... I can't remember what it was. It was like irons or something.
Doesn't one of the adverts in our magazine have a giant pink bra on it?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. That's true.
It's some hosting company.
Yeah.
Xiao, which says he would like to see Linux used in Hollywood. I'm sick to the back teeth of seeing Max in films, and lately it's got worse. All of Arrow, the Green Arrow series, blatantly sells Windows 8. They even have people who have to steal to eat who seem to be able to afford a Microsoft Surface. I don't know what you're talking
They're
about.
They're probably giving away the Microsoft Surface.
They're probably trying to eat the Microsoft Surface. I didn't know what you were talking about when you said Arrow, so I googled it, and apparently it stars John Barrowman, so I'm never going to watch that. Ravetko FX. I would love Linux Mint to control my fridge. Then all my food will be fresher and mintier.
Yeah.
Great.
Not sure I really want mintier ham.
No. No, fair enough.
Just a personal choice.
You can install it on your extra special mojito fridge.
Ah, yes.
I can see that.
/Fido, penguin fiddler. What? I'd like to see my dog running Linux. Perhaps then I would be able to successfully moderate his unhealthy interest in licking his bits.
What has gone into everybody? Must be summers here.
Sorry, why is that an unhealthy interest? Dr. Astronaut would like to see Debian on Mars. Yes, good man.
You just reminded me, a friend of mine had a band when he was a kid, and he named it after his dog, and it was called Dylan's Lipstick.
Right, those are the frivolous or more varied suggestions. Not that's the, no, Linux on a car is pretty good. I'd like that.
That's been done before, isn't it? Japanese. Yeah, I'm not sure if it was Honda or Jama.
And Renault, I think.
Yeah, they probably lots of them use embedded Linux their in-car entertainment systems.
But it seems that the push now is towards Android rather than a different version of Linux.
But you just want to get an SSH server running on it, really. That's what, that's all you need.
It's something that you can tell you how many miles you've done and then work that into various apps and fuel consumption.
Wouldn't
and mileage
be difficult
and stuff.
To use the command line while you're driving? I think.
Well, yeah.
Tough.
If you've got
someone else is driving.
If you've got a speech to text thing, you could read out the commands like, just from memory as you're talking. Anyway, what did come up strongly in the answers is that everyone wants to see more Linux used in the public sector. Wherever tax money is spent, people would rather that their taxes were spent on things that don't cost any money. So then,
and that are better.
And that are better. Mm-hmm. So that taxes can be spent on more better things, like body armour for troops in Afghanistan.
Chasing Amazon and Google for their operation.
Exactly.
I mean, I just think if the amount the UK government, just the UK alone, spends on Microsoft licenses, if it didn't even do it to save money, if it spent the same amount on free software, getting it to work just the way it wanted, it would be amazing.
It would be It'd amazing.
Be that, I mean, I'd imagine it's hundreds of millions of pounds a year.
Is that data available somewhere? Can we find out how much money the UK government spends on Microsoft licenses?
Well, they don't spend it directly on Microsoft, do they? They'll spend it on a contract with Fujitsu Siemens or with Capgemini.
I was going to say, I actually used to work on the Capgemini contract, the HMRC. Mm.
Can you talk about it?
Probably not.
can you make faces?
He's not coming to the office tomorrow, my friend.
Can you make faces and hand gestures that we can then interpret?
It was this much.
My God. That's big.
Well, the contract was so big that, I mean, Capgemini is a massive company. We created our own business group, so a legally separate entity, so that if we knackered up the contract, we could fold the business group and not incur the losses on the rest of the company. So Capgemini UK, I think, employs about, before Aspire, employed about 20,000 people. Aspire was the name of the contract. And they were split into three business groups, consulting, outsourcing, and technology. And a third one was created just for this project, just to upgrade HMRC's desktop software, basically. And then to do some other stuff as well. I mean, it was a phenomenal amount of money, and it was just a load of goons hacking around. I think we were only upgrading to XP as well. That's too long ago. My memory fades, but it was a joke.
It will fade tomorrow.
It's a joke. It's the official top secret synopsis of the whole project.
A bunch of goons. Let me check with our legal team.
But I mean, the thing is, you can look at it. It was a Windows upgrade, but the amount of software that needed, custom software that needed rewriting, and the amount of commercial software that was no longer going to be supported and all this sort of stuff, may as well have been upgrading to Linux, to be honest. It wouldn't have been any more difficult. And if you just think about what it would do to the UK's technology scene, if all that money was spent on UK companies, UK developers, yes, you know, doing this work, I mean, that it would be amazing. And then everybody in the country could then, you know, imagine if you're a public sector, for example, we work in InDesign, it's a desktop publishing package. If it means we can't work from home unless we have InDesign. But if we used open source, if your company used just open source, work from anywhere. You need to go and install this software there. No issues with licensing. Getting a new person, don't need to worry about software licensing. Just stick them on, get them working. It's just, just seems to me that this money could be so much better spent. But I guess everyone listening probably thinks the same thing.
It certainly seems that way from the comments. Terry71, because of the huge amounts that national and local governments spend on licensing, etc., any use of Linux would save everyone money. Schools also seem to be tied into contracts with proprietary systems, which also seem to be overly expensive. Spangwidges says, I agree with Terry. There's no excuse for government and educational PCs not to be running a Floss OS. It makes sense in so many ways. Xiaoj, I'd like to see Linux adopted everywhere where the public have to pay taxes. Hospitals, schools, government offices, military. Sultan of Swing says, I agree with Toei, Spangwidges, Xiaoj, and Ray Woods, who I've copied and pasted in a different sector. Sorry, Ray. Also, I would like a Linux lunchbox.
Actually, just more on this. I was at Fosdem a few months ago, and he was talking to Amelia Anders' daughter, an MEP. Some people have taken this question to her as an MEP, saying, can the competition inquiry investigate why Microsoft is getting all these? So she put it to the Competition Commission, and they came back and said, the reason that Microsoft is getting all these contracts, all these big government contracts, there isn't a free software supplier that will do it. No one's pitching to governments with open source solutions that can scale large enough. I know to a certain extent this is a chicken and egg situation. You're not going to have a company that can do it until
there's... Go from nothing to a kind of company that can do that.
This is one of the reasons.
Well, can the government do that? Can they create an agency which would be completely dedicated to the implementation of this technology within the national system?
Possibly not, actually. Under European competition law, that would be favouring one solution, whereas they have to be vendor neutral.
But the great thing about free software is that it doesn't have a vendor.
Yeah.
I mean, they could maybe create a policy of using free software.
A policy which our government has.
Well, yes, yeah. But I mean, yes, exactly. But there are ways that they could do it. They could say they want to move to free software for these very legitimate reasons, and we need to nurture an environment where companies can pitch for it.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it has done that, but...
Yes, but they're building high-speed rail lines to Birmingham.
Yeah, instead.
It took me 45 minutes to go from Waterloo to Marylebone the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
They need a high-speed link.
They need a high-speed link. How improbable. Yeah, and that's the rest of the comments. Actually, that's public sector, blah, 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 subsection of public sector in education. In the UK, this is Ray Woods, in the UK we take it for granted that IT studies will just be teaching our kids to become dependent upon Microsoft products. This must stop. All of us in the GNU Linux world already know how most people will be able to undertake their normal IT activities without Microsoft. This knowledge is long overdue to the average member of the public. Alan Mayer says he'd like to see more Linux in the workplace. The only reason that Microsoft Office or Microsoft Windows is taught in schools is because that is what is used in the workplace. Back to our ridiculous chicken and egg situation. If LibreOffice was the new standard in the workplace, running on Fedora or Ubuntu, then that is what teachers would be teaching in schools.
The thing that annoys me about our particular workplace is we do use Office on our work computers, but we use an outdated version of Office so that when we get stuff emailed to us from the higher-ups, you get the new version of Office, it churns through. It would be better for us, it would be more compatible for us to use the latest version of LibreOffice than it is for us to use the old outdated version of Microsoft Office we use. That is how ridiculous the situation is.
Yes, it is.
And that's all the weather.
That was a really good podcast.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think we should carry on debating.
No, it's lunchtime. It's already well into lunchtime. It's gone lunchtime. We should go for a pint.
In the pub, I meant.
Yeah.
We can go and carry on chatting about that.
So that's it. Thanks for listening. Love the Linux format. Buy the Linux format.
Was that a subliminal message?
Yeah.
Buy the Linux format. Buy the Linux format.
He's got to do it with a sexy voice because that's what advertisers do. Do it in a sexy voice.
By Linux formats.
Oh, yeah.
It stops us getting.
Yeah, sexy lady.
Sexy lady.
By Linux format.
Right, let's go.
Bye.